Ready?
Yep.
All right.
Seven Oscar wins!
The winner takes all. You never sacrifice thy will.
All right, that's our official intro music. Welcome back to the Playback Podcast. My name is Noah. I'm joined here with Hyder.
I am back again.
And last night was the Oscars. I covered that in a episode. You guys can watch that. It's live now. But, you know, Hyder didn't get the chance to. He was actually watching Scream. Thought that maybe he would like to talk a little bit about the Oscar winners last night.
I definitely have some opinions.
You've got some opinions. So what's up, man? What do you think? What do you think, bud? First of all, how you doing?
I'm great.
How's life?
I just watched Scream 6.
Right.
You already know.
You got please talk.
Favorite slasher enterprise.
Yeah. What?
That's my favorite slasher, like enterprise or franchise. I'm tripping right now. Franchise.
Dumbass. All right. Yeah, you're doing good, buddy.
How are you doing?
All right. I'm good.
How are you?
What the fuck was that?
So let's just hop straight into the Oscars, I guess. I already
know. What a weird intro to the fucking podcast.
Yeah, you feel like I'm getting disrespected immediately.
I mean, I guess. Yeah, so what'd you think about the Oscars?
Obviously, you know, everything everywhere supremacy.
Right.
As they should.
A24. Oh yeah, A24 won like how many?
I just know they won everything they were nominated in. I think Angela Bassett should have won supporting actress.
Supporting actress definitely should have went to her. And you know, I talked about it last night too, that honestly, it should have just went to Stephanie Hsu. It went to the right movie, just the wrong actress, I think.
Do you think it was like a pity thing because it is the first, right?
Yeah, that's what I was saying too. I think it was her first time being nominated. And what I didn't know when I recorded the podcast last night was that she actually got the award for Best Actress at the SAG Awards. So she won at the SAG Awards. And remember, if you go back to 2 weeks ago when we were talking about the SAG Awards, it basically just sets the floor for whoever's going to win the Oscars. Yep. And then we saw that with Michelle Yeoh, too. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I just think Jamie Lee Curtis didn't do bad.
I know, but just Stephanie.
Definitely did way better. And yeah. Angela Bassett did way better, too.
Wait, so. Angela Bassett, I think, had two of the best monologues in any of the movies last year. I think Michael B. Jordan is hilarious for going, yeah, hey, auntie. I think my favorite performance, though, there's a lot of performances. I don't know if you paid attention to that. Like,
I did, yeah.
Happened.
Yeah.
The triple R performance is definitely.
It was better. It was better than the Lady Gaga performance and the Rihanna performance.
Yeah, it was my favorite performance.
Yeah, me too.
You could tell, like, especially with the way they were dancing in the crowd.
Did you watch RRR?
Yeah.
Triple R.
Yeah.
RRR.
Really, really hard movie because it's not my style of movie to watch.
No.
But
I heard there's a lot going on in that movie.
It's a lot, and I got like overstimulated very fast. Especially with like a tiger, a scratch thing.
Yeah. I still don't understand what it's about. I think it's like a action musical.
It's a musical because it's Bollywood.
Yeah.
But like, I don't really can't explain much of it to you. Two of the acceptance speeches, again, some of the best speeches I've heard. And we're not going to play them this time, guys. Mm. But you already know which ones. I know that one of those made you kind of emotional.
Yeah, just a little bit. I mean, like, you know, I didn't, you know.
You didn't cry.
Yeah. No, I didn't cry for more than 5 minutes. But yeah, you're talking about Ke Huy Quan?
Yeah. Deserved. Mm-hmm. I think didn't he win everything he was nominated for? I don't think he lost any.
Well, he was only nominated for the supporting actor.
Yeah, everything he was nominated for.
Yeah, so the one that he was nominated for? Yeah.
No, I meant like all the award shows.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. I feel like going into the Oscars, he was pretty much just sweeping every supporting actor award there was out there. I think Colin Farrell maybe got one or two.
Oh, did Barry Keoghan win one?
Yeah, I think maybe he won once, but it was one of the smaller award shows.
Yeah, I can't remember which one it was, but yeah, I think he actually did win one.
Yeah.
So. Brendan Fraser, I think, in my opinion, minus Ke Huy Quan and Michelle Yeoh, the most deserved award of the night. I like that Ke Huy Quan and Brendan Fraser always like look back at each other whenever they win awards.
Mm-hmm.
It's the after, like the post Oscars interviews that were the best though to me.
Yeah, when they come up with their Oscar and everybody's like hounding them.
Yeah,
yeah, asking them how they feel.
And then once again, I just like to say it again, A24 is the best studio, in my opinion.
Do you have what movies won?
Because
I know Everything Everywhere All at Once won a shit ton.
Isn't Tar on their movies as well?
I think so. The Whale's an A24 movie as well.
They were bodying last year.
Yeah.
They had X, Pearl. They had so many good movies last year.
I brought this up last night also. So I started watching the Oscars in 2019. And I think that 2019 and 2022 are my favorite years of movies. And, you know, actually, that's when I started working at the theater, too, 2019. What is your favorite year of movies? Because for me, it's still 2019, but 2022 has been...
I got hired at the end of 2018. Mm-hmm. So I would also say 2019, because that was my first full year working there, and I had to experience every movie. I think that was the most I've ever watched movies.
Yeah, me too. I think with The Lion King coming out, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, 2019 summer was incredible.
When did The Joker come out?
That was 2019.
Did you get scheduled?
October.
Did you get scheduled to watch it?
Yeah. No. Not to watch it.
I watched it 7 times.
Yeah.
Back to back.
For those of you guys who don't understand what we're talking about, they used to schedule people because they were so hesitant and like kind of paranoid about what would happen because of what happened in Colorado in the Dark Knight screening, that they scheduled people, our employees, to, you know, go in there and watch the movie to make sure that things are okay in there. And people like Hyder literally watched the movie 7 fucking times.
Yeah, after like the third showing. Well, after like the halfway through the second showing, I was dead.
Right.
All right, so A24 makes history as the first studio to sweep major categories, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress, and Best Supporting Actor.
Jesus, man.
They swept all of the major awards away.
Yeah. And I mean, feel like I thought the momentum, because this movie came out in January of 2022.
Yeah.
And I thought that the momentum of the movie wouldn't last. But no, they literally lasted all the way until the end of the year, all the way up till now, basically.
I mean, people are probably going to because it's an Oscar award winner, which means it'll be back in theaters.
And, you know, I remember making a video about this, but Everything Everywhere All at Once was a limited release.
Yeah, we barely got it.
Yeah. And then A24 extended the release, and eventually it became the highest grossing A24 film.
I remember like planning on which theater I was going to go watch it at, and then like last second, very last day.
Yeah, our theater got it.
Got it.
Yeah.
And we were packed that day.
Mm-hmm. So overall, you think that the Oscars were a success? There's no slaps, no controversy?
No slaps for sure. But again, I genuinely think Angela Bassett should have won.
Yeah.
If not her... then you know who, but Everything Everywhere deserved its awards regardless.
What'd you think of Best Picture? Because there was 10 nominees and there were a lot of good movies in Best Picture category. Everything Everywhere obviously won, but
the only thing that I could have been like, this possibly could win, if we're talking full Best Picture, would have been All Quiet on the Western Front.
Okay. Did you watch it?
Yes. Okay. I watched the old one and this one.
Oh, it was a remake?
Yeah.
Oh shit, I did not know that. But yeah, anything else you want to say about the Oscars before we move on?
No, I'm good. I'm ready to talk about Last of Us, though.
I know. All right, yeah. So we're going to be talking about Last of Us. We're not going to get into like too many spoilers, but I mean, it is, you know, it's one of the most popular shows of all time. I think you said it gained like, what, 8 million?
It was the most watched episode. Yeah. It also passed their most watched show.
Don't be surprised if we start talking about spoilers, or if Hyder talks about spoilers, because I have not caught up yet. But if you want to just keep on going.
Last of Us, obviously, the cast, Pedro Pascal and Bella Ramsey, they absolutely body this show. Like, no, it's very common in shows that someone will surpass, like, one of the main characters. And, like, you know, a side character becomes a favorite character. No, this does not happen. They body the shit out of everybody else. They are so good at acting. It's insane. You can feel all of their emotion. You can tell they're actually friends, though. Like, you can always tell when people don't get along in movies because it's, like, evident. Like, they don't want to work with each other. You can tell that Bella Ramsey and Pedro Pascal are, like, good friends in this show.
They got chemistry.
They got really good chemistry. It's like a father-daughter relationship. It was way more gore than I expected, which I actually really like because, you know, shows tend to, like, shy away from something being, like, super violent. But if you played the game, like, you would legit get your head torn off. So they actually had that in one of the scenes. They had a guy get his head torn off. It's the way that you die from that specific zombie.
I think it was Last of Us 2. And I've only seen this because of the clips. But there's a little kid that literally gets punched into the garage door and just like
fucking... Oh, neck snap.
His neck snaps. Yeah.
There's also, like, it's like a famous scene where, like, there's like a bunny.
I have not seen that.
You'll see. Speaking of like heading into the game, in the last episode, I didn't notice it in anything else. It may have just been me missing it. But there was three specific scenes that were like exactly how the video game was.
Really?
Yeah. So there's a scene where he legit turns to Bella Ramsey and goes, I'm going to help you up and you can get up here and you can help like pull the ladder down. Like, you know how you play like Uncharted and like
games like that. And like they have like the interactive.
The interactive like little ladder that you have to help them up to. They did that. And then when he gets up there, it's the follow me. And they're like way ahead of you, but they wait for you to get there and then they start sprinting off. Mm-hmm. That happens in that too. It's just a bunch of things. And then there's a hallway scene, which is going to be a major spoiler for everybody. So if you do not want it spoiled for you, please don't listen to this part. If you haven't played the game, if you played the game, you know what I'm talking about right now. He obliterates the entire hospital staff.
That's what the memes were about then. Yeah. Because I was just seeing a bunch of like pictures on Twitter.
You ever play the game?
No.
All right. So Joel, let me explain the premise real quickly. Bella Ramsey is immune to the zombies. Mm-hmm. She can still get killed by them.
I saw the first episode.
But she can't. Can't turn. So they want to make a cure out of her blood. He gets very quickly that she would most likely die in the operation. And he's bonded too much to her. Mm-hmm. He's already lost one daughter. So he obliterates the entire hospital staff. All of them. The doctors and all.
You know, going on Twitter last night, there was a bunch of Oscar pictures. Mm-hmm. And then there was just a bunch of pictures of doctors going like this. Doing the Vernon pose.
No. Yeah, because the doctor goes, I'm not going to let you. And he just goes, that's crazy. And one right in the forehead.
That's insane.
Like, no hesitation. Just shot him right in the forehead.
Oh, by the way, I mean, I don't really care about spoilers. So, like, hearing all of this talk doesn't really faze me. So, I'm still going to watch it and probably still appreciate everything that's happening.
But if you've played video games, he does, like, the dodging the bullets and, like, shooting up the hall and stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know how people, like, it's pretty unreal when you're, like, fighting multiple people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens to him. He just, like, guns a bunch of people down. Three things that I'm going to be afraid of for the next season, because this was the last season finale. It was a really good episode. I think overall, I'd give it like a 9 out of 10 for the first season. It was really good. Every episode, they gain more viewers, mm-hmm. and they're already the most watched show on HBO Max.
Right.
Bella Ramsey gets some weird-ass hate.
I heard.
But it's not like... It's one because she like doesn't look like the main character. But they could just be like, hey, she doesn't look like the main character. It's because they're like, yeah, she's not as hot as the girl. The girl's 15.
Okay.
In the game, bro.
No, I heard the criticism that she doesn't look anything like it. Yeah, I've never
that's fine.
Heard that.
You're not going to find someone who looks like her.
Yeah.
It's a video game. You can find someone who looks a little closer to her, but who cares if she's a better actress? I feel like there's going to be a drop-off in the next season of fans because of like the Pedro Pascal hype.
Yeah, he's not going to be in it.
Well, he is.
But, like, first he's episode. Not going to be... Like,
after that, he won't be.
Right. Okay.
That's a spoiler, guys. If you haven't played the second game, go play it, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about in the first 15 minutes of the game.
I'm assuming he dies.
Oh, he gets assassinated. A brutal death. The daughter of the doctor he kills him.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Okay. Like, brutally. That, and then I just think more zombies would be cool. But that's just me being, like, nerdy. There wasn't that many zombies. There was, like, a horde of zombies and shit. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of, like, them fighting zombies. That's pretty much it. That's all I have for The Last of Us. If you haven't watched it, I really think you should. Even if you haven't played the games, it's still a really good show, standalone.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to watch it. And, you know, I don't know when I'm going to watch it. That's the thing. But I do want to come back here and give you my thoughts on it once I've completed it.
I think you'll agree with me on the Bella Ramsey and Pedro Pascal just being way better than everybody else. Oh, and Nick Offerman's in the show, too. I forgot about that. He's only there for an
episode.
I've
heard episode 3 is amazing.
Yeah, it's a really good episode. It also has, like, a lot of funny memes coming out of that episode.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about my favorite thing. I love Scream, and I'm very excited to talk about this.
All right, guys, moving on. We're going to be getting into, well, first of all, this past weekend, Scream 6 came out, and we're going to be reviewing the original Scream that came out in 1996. This was directed by Wes Craven, starring David Arquette, Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox, Matthew Lillard, Drew Barrymore. You know, this was my first time rewatching it in maybe like a couple years. I'm not sure about you.
I watch it like every Halloween.
It seems like it because I remember this movie a lot better than I thought. That just goes to show how good of a movie it is because it's a classic. And we're going to get into it here. So, yes, Scream, favorite slasher franchise, yeah. First of all, how would you compare this to like Friday the 13th?
See, the reason that I like Scream so much is because it's not like, hey, this guy's got powers or he can haunt you in your nightmares, which is, you know, another Wes Craven thing.
Yeah.
It's legit just a dude with a mask and a knife just planning on killing people.
Could be anybody.
It could be anyone, and that's what makes Scream so fun. Because you spend the entire movie going, who is it?
I love the Scream movies. I think that it, and I actually got introduced to the Scream movies by Scary Movie. And
Oh, yeah, they mean that shit a lot.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of the franchise, especially Scream 5. That revitalized things for me. And Scream 6, which we're going to talk about in a little bit. Let's get into the horror classic, Scream, directed by Wes Craven. So, high school student Casey Becker is home alone when she receives a phone call from an unknown person, during which they discuss horror movies. And I just want to, before we continue, this opening scene is like fucking iconic. It's been parodied to death. It's been redone in every single Scream movie, basically. The opening scene where the first person that you see gets killed. And this person, Casey Becker, was played by Drew Barrymore. Do you want to talk a little bit about how important that was? Because, you know, defying like the audience's expectations, you see Drew Barrymore as the first character here.
So the reason that that specific scene is so important is because Drew Barrymore, from the very beginning of their marketing, was the main character. Mm-hmm. So to kill off the main character in, what, not even the first 2 minutes of the movie is insane. It's it's never been done before. They put her on the, they slapped her on the front of every poster. They were like, all right, this is it. All the interviews, Drew Barrymore.
I did not know that, actually.
Like, I think she backed out for a different movie. I can't remember the name of the movie that she backed out for. But so when people went to theaters to watch it and she just dies, they were all like, what the fuck is going on? And I remember talking to specifically, like, we have our GM's name, Craig, about this. And he said, that's what would happen. People would walk out of the theater confused if that was the actual, like, the end of the movie.
Yeah. And this is going to happen in the majority of the Scream films. Not the first person you see, like, being a huge star or whatever. But it's the fact that Wes Craven knew that audiences would gravitate towards this movie because so-and-so is in it. And he kind of made it, like, this meta thing where, yes, this is what you're expecting. This is not what you're going to get. And, I mean, we see that later in the film when they start referencing Friday the 13th, or Ghostface starts asking, you know, Casey about what's your favorite scary movie. He starts playing trivia with her. Oh, who is the killer in Halloween? And, oh, who's the, you know, killer in Friday the 13th? She gets it wrong. She dies a brutal death. And so does her boyfriend. And that's our introduction to Ghostface. And I think Ghostface was a pretty solid villain. Because, again, like you said before we started, it could be anybody.
Yeah. That's what happens in every single movie. We'll talk about it more when we talk about Scream 6 because they do reference it quite a bit. But as you can see, it can legit be one person, two people.
Yeah.
Could be like an entire team of people like doing things.
It's usually two people from what I see. And so, I think Scream 4 was the only one that had a solo killer.
Yes.
Spoilers.
If you haven't watched the Screams, please go watch them. They are actually like, even the bad ones are decent. Like they're kind of fun to watch.
Shit. Sorry, guys. Fucking spoiler alert for Scream 1996 if you didn't know that already.
It's the dude who, you know, is Jughead's father in Riverdale.
Really?
Yeah.
Why do you watch Riverdale?
I watched the first couple seasons because of their shit.
Did you watch the Marvel stuff?
No, I stopped watching way before that.
The Scarlet Witch stuff?
Get back onto this.
Okay, so last thing I want to say about that is Drew Barrymore's beautiful.
One of my first celebrity crushes is actually Neve Campbell.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what? I was going to say, right after we get into, after they find, you know, Casey Becker's body hanging there, we get into the Scream logo, and then we cut straight directly into Neve Campbell. I have a little thing hanging up right here. I'll give it to you real quick if you just want to take a closer look. That is Miss Amy Jo Johnson of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. That started in about 1992, 1993 or something like that.
That was, 9 years before your time?
Look, I got jump scared because when I saw Neve Campbell's face, I got a little excited. I was like, holy shit. She's in the movie. Amy Jo Johnson's in the movie. So, news media descends all around town in the wake of the murders, and a police investigation begins. Teenager Sydney Prescott struggles with the upcoming first anniversary of her mother Maureen's rape and murder, while a news reporter, Gail Weathers, whom Sydney despises, arrives as a press member. Gail was responsible for spreading rumors and conspiracy theories about Maureen's death, insinuating that the imprisoned person named Cotton Weary, who was tried and convicted of Maureen's rape and murder, there's a lot of commas in this paragraph, what the fuck, was not responsible for the crime. That night, while waiting at home for her best friend Tatum Riley's arrival, Sydney gets a taunting phone call and is attacked by Ghostface. Sydney's boyfriend, Billy Loomis, arrives immediately after the killer flees. When he drops his cell phone, Sydney suspects of him making the call and runs off, and Billy is placed in police custody. So this paragraph actually skipped over something that I wanted to talk about. The first scene, which was the first scene with Sydney Prescott. We cut straight directly into Sydney Prescott in her room, and we see her boyfriend, Billy. He sneaks in, and he's got a weird look on his face. My first time watching this movie, I kind of just like already thought that it was going to be him just because of the boyfriend trope, which again speaks to Wes Craven knowing what the audience expects.
Isn't she like turn him down in the first part of the movie? Because he's just trying to, you know, he's trying to have
sex. He's trying to have sex.
It's just really funny because the main premise of all like the Scream movies and stuff, a big part of it is the rules.
Right.
And then, you know, like, I think it's rule 3, don't have sex. And they actually later in the movie mention the specific rules for horror movies. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that everyone like teases back to that, Sydney didn't want to have sex, was part of the reason that she was the final girl.
It starts off with this like tension because you still don't really know who it could be. Her dad leaves on a vacation for the weekend. He says that in the opening scene also. So he becomes a suspect as well. And it goes into being like this almost murder mystery because they're trying to find out who this killer is. But also it's a slasher movie at the same time because our lead character, Sydney Prescott, is getting hunted down by this person. So it's this whole like long investigation. It goes into stuff with her mom and that being the first anniversary of her murder. And it's laid out very well. So the next day, Billy is released and suspicion shifts to Sydney's father, Neil Prescott, who I just talked about, due to the phone calls having been traced to his phone. After school suspended in the wake of the murders, Ghostface ambushes Principal Arthur Hembree and stabs him to death. He's played by the Fonz.
His death was very funny to me. It's just really bad to say, but the way he died was just really funny. So he did something that not a lot of people in horror movies do, where they get the first jump scare and the second jump scare, and then you expect them to be like right behind
him. Good point. So this movie, jump scares were something, you know, that has been around since like the 70s, 80s.
It's a mainstay of like horror.
Yeah. Wes Craven did something a little different with these movies because, again, you know, he knows that the audience is expecting something. He'll just take that away from you.
Yeah.
So he'll build the suspense and you hear the music, but nothing like comes, you know, that's what she said. So you like that one?
Yeah, that was a good one.
Absolutely love that. And someone who does that a lot now is James Wan. That's why I like his horror movies all the time too.
Yeah. So it was just cool, you know, and if you pay attention, this also reflects back to Scream 6, which I'll talk about more, is just the way that they use music. In these movies is like he'll amp up like small noises so that it's completely dead quiet in the theater. Everyone's like waiting to see something and then boom, crash.
So that's what makes this movie a little bit different than all the other ones. And that's why it makes it, you know, revolutionary for horror films going forward. Tatum's boyfriend and Billy's best friend, Stu Mocker, throws a party to celebrate the school's closure. Gail attends uninvited as she expects Ghostface to strike again. Tatum's older brother. This plot fucking sucks, dude. Like, they're skipping over so much shit.
Yeah, how did we get to the party already?
Yeah.
Missed like 3 character deaths.
What do we miss?
Ghostface purposely making her look crazy because, like, she starts to feel like a little, like, insecure because she blamed her boyfriend. And he was like, how could you think it was me? Which is, like, on purpose. He's trying to make her look crazy so that everyone shifts the suspicion onto her and her father. Mm-hmm. Because the entire time, their goal was to kill Sydney, frame their father.
Pure gaslight.
Yeah, just gaslight. Yeah. So flip forward to Sydney at their house, at Dewey's house. Mm-hmm. And then she gets another phone call.
Yeah.
And Dewey comes running in with a gun. And then, you know, they no longer feel safe.
And this all happens when the boyfriend, Billy, is in prison.
Yeah, so that's...
So that just throws them off the trail.
That throws them off the trail. That they're like, oh, no, it can't be Billy. Billy gets released from prison the next day. Mm-hmm. that's when they go back to school. Right. And they go to school, and everyone's like, hey, we don't know who it is, so just for safety, we're going to shut down the school. And then, boom, principal is dead. The very end of school, they decided to get their lick back and just go kill the principal. School shut down even more now. Didn't they hang him from, like, the flagpole or something?
Yeah, which is...
I mean, that's the whole point, though. The Scream deaths are always... They always take an extra step in their death. Mm-hmm. Like, it's this very gruesome murder. I think now, because school got out, Stu, at the very end of them all getting out, goes, hey, party at my house. Because they essentially just got an extended summer. All this happens, they're throwing a house party, and that's where you were just at, I think.
Okay, so Gail goes in, and she's still trying to gain more evidence. She sneaks a camera in, and you know, everybody's like fanning over her. They're like, oh, I love your show, I love your show. She sneaks in a little video camera in the living room. That plays into a little bit of like the reveal later down the line. Tatum, who is Dewey's little sister and Sydney's best friend, she goes to the garage to get some beer, where she is cornered by Ghostface. I love how stupid... this is the first movie, right? So, like, obviously, in Scream 6, if someone saw Ghostface, they wouldn't be like, ha, 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 nice try. I love how stupid Tatum is here. She's like, oh, nice, but, like, you probably should take that mask off. It's, you know, Sydney's up there. She's not going to appreciate that. Yeah, and it's like, yo, you really think that people are going to be, you know, joking about this? Yeah,
no. That was the like, definition of slutty, stupid friend.
Yeah.
And that's what I love. Like, they threw every single horror movie trope in this movie.
And, you know, this horror movie started a lot of tropes, too.
Yeah, it started the final girl. And no, it didn't start the final girl. It like, defined, like, final girl.
Yeah.
Even more than, like, Halloween did.
Yeah. So, obviously, the ghost face that she was talking to is the real fucking ghost face.
Yes.
Or one of the real ghost face. And, you know, her neck gets crushed in the garage door, which goes to the point that you were saying that...
You missed one.
What happened?
So you missed one of the major points of this movie was this was one of the first people you see actually fight back. Because she starts throwing bottles at him and, like, trying to run away. And he's, like, trying to kill her, but he can't. Which shows that they're not, like, professional killers.
I mean, yeah, Sydney fought back a little bit, too.
Yeah, but, like, this is the first one where you see the entire thing. Mm. Where you see them, like, the whole entire thing, which is sort of signaling that's also coming to an end. Mm-hmm. Because it's the first time you see them fight back, they die, and then you see the reaction to finding out that she died.
Mm-hmm. And I love this movie because, number one, like, in the very beginning, in, like, the first 20 minutes of the movie, you see the five friends sitting in front, right? And they're just talking. It slowly... Their lives slowly, you know, dissipate, I guess. And until there's only, like, a few suspects left.
Yeah.
And then the pacing of the kills, too, is perfect throughout the entire movie. Because one person dies, then we go with someone else. And then another person dies. And then now you're thinking, oh, shit, well, who could it be? Because that person just died. And so on and so on and so on. And then this garage scene was like, oh, shit, we're in the final act.
Yeah, because... they're at a house party. Now it could legit be anyone because their entire school is at this party.
The entire school. Gail's there, so she's trying to, you know, get to the bottom of it.
The funniest part is in a lot of movies, a lot of horror movies specifically, mm-hmm. cops are seen as useless characters.
Yeah.
Where is Dewey when we're talking about this?
No fucking clue.
He is right outside the party.
Yeah, many people were at the party, so they did not hear what was happening in the garage. None of the bottles hitting the floor. Nobody heard that. The garage and the death, the screaming, nobody heard that either.
You want to know that I noticed, though? Is if have you paid attention to the two, like, people, the two killers before we, you know, spoil it for people who haven't seen it? They're built differently. One's kind of, like, a little taller and a lot bigger, and the other one's smaller, like, a little skinnier. You notice how she knew who it was immediately?
Because of the frame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She knew it was her boyfriend.
Yeah.
So that, like, was a small hint that everyone should have noticed.
That is true.
Because he also, at the very end, like, when they flash back, he's not there.
After Tatum dies, there's only Sydney, Billy, Stu, and then their little friend, Randy Meeks, and Gail's cameraman, Kenny.
He was mentioned because, if you remember, there's, like, a little lag in the camera. And he sees Ghostface.
Yeah.
And he's trying to warn them. And then he looks, and he thinks, like, he forgets that there's a lag. Yeah.
But and he's like right behind him.
He looks and he's right behind me, isn't he?
Yeah. This paragraph fucking sucks, dude. They skip over so much.
That's right. I got this and all the details memorized.
The next one is the next thing that they talk about is them having sex.
Oh, when you go back up, so yeah. So
this is gonna be a bitch to fucking edit, bro.
Yeah, just because of the paragraph, we'll get over this though. So the next part would be I talked about this earlier. There's always a character who like states the rules, and that's I think his name's what would you say, Randy?
Randy, yeah, he works at the video store.
He works at the video store, which is a very important detail. That video store is like consistently like coming back up.
Yeah,
he works at the video store. He starts naming off rules. He goes, you know, rule number one, don't sneak off. Rule number two, don't say I'll be back. Rule number three, don't have sex. If you pay attention, every single one of those details was broken.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the right away, the I'll be back was broken.
The movie is so meta, and Wes Craven knew that.
Mm-hmm.
And Wes Craven, he made a bunch of horror movies before this, too.
So
he knows.
Created some of the tropes that he was making fun of.
Yeah. And, yeah, we said it already. You know, expectations got
shattered immediately. So, boom. Sydney and Billy decide to get up and go upstairs. They're just talking about things, you know. And then cue to Sydney breaking rule number, I think, three. I can never remember what the actual rules are.
One of the rules, though.
One of the rules. And she's her and Billy have sex.
Don't have sex, you fucking sick.
And then I think I think Ghostface attacks right after they have sex.
That's fucked up, bro. That's so fucked up.
Which is all this stuff is going on downstairs too. Like there's the other stuff going downstairs. I think Gail and Dewey find the car that's crashed.
Yeah, so after having sex, Sydney and Billy are confronted by Ghostface and Billy gets stabbed. I want to talk about a spoiler right there. Fuck it. I want to talk about a spoiler right here. Billy and Stu are the fucking killers, right? But it goes to show that, like...
I already spoiled that, didn't I?
Huh?
No, we already spoiled it.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But all still, right. Like, I feel like I can talk about it now.
Yeah, let's go.
So, he stabs Billy. These two are fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's... I'll mention this again in Scream 6 review on why that's important. Why the two different killers is so important. So Kenny, the cameraman, notices. By the way, you got to remember that Gail is shitting on this cameraman the entire movie.
Yeah, he's comic relief.
He's the comic relief. One of the comic relief characters. He's a punching bag. He is doing his best to try to help the people inside the house right now. Because right. He notices like there's a ghost face inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
He runs outside. He notices them running towards the car. And then he realizes that like he's most likely about to die.
Yeah.
Because the guy is right in front of him. Kenny dies. I think they go into Dewey's car.
Uh-huh.
And then this is another one of those tropes. I think this is a Cujo like thing where the locks start popping up in the car because like there's too many doors for her to like lock at the same time. Mm-hmm. And then he disappears. I think he's on top of the car. She runs back in and then I think she runs into Gail and Dewey.
Okay.
And then I think Dewey gets stabbed.
A fake out death again.
Yeah, another fake out death. You think Dewey's dead. Which they dead. Do
all the time in this franchise. And then in horror movies in general now.
I think Gail gets like knocked out or something. And then it essentially ends up being one on two. You find out like the entire thing. And that's another horror movie trope where they're like the villain just goes on this endless rant.
Mm-hmm.
About like, these are my motivations. This is like everything.
Last happening. 20 minutes of the movie too.
Yeah. And you find out, this is a boom, big reveal. It's two killers.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes more sense because... Who was doing all this shit when Billy was in prison?
Exactly, yeah.
When Billy was having sex with Sydney, yeah. Who was killing the other people. It all clicks. They pull out Sydney's dad from the closet, and they pull out his phone, then they pull out the voice modulator. They do all this stuff. Big reveal happens, and then Sydney decides to flip the script on them. Because, you know, badass, final girl. And she starts, like, running around the house, using the phone calls, like, against them. She uses all of their tactics against them.
Mm-hmm.
And then in order for them to, like, sort of pull it off, they stab each other.
Yeah, so that's, yeah, they're fucking crazy.
And it just didn't show how unhinged these two people are.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if they mentioned it too much, and I don't know if you're going to go into it. But,
I'm going. Okay, are you talking about the mom?
Yeah, go ahead.
And then the biggest reveal of all was the thing that made Sydney look the craziest, and how, like, I think Cotton Weary was, like, killed too, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they killed all these people. And the entire time, the people that raped and murdered Sydney's mom were her boyfriend and her best friend's boyfriend. And it was like the first murder to start it all for them.
Mm-hmm.
And then they planned on framing their dad and ended up accidentally framing somebody else because he was hooking up with the mom. Mm-hmm. And so all this shit happened. They got lucky. They lucked into that like frame, but they were still trying to frame the father for all the other murders. They pull the father out of the closet and he's in taped up and all shit. And this is also another like small horror movie trope where there's just like a person like locked in the closet mm-hmm. every time. You know, she starts fighting back. I think she dropped, doesn't she drop a what's called a TV on Stu?
Yeah.
So she kills him? Yeah, they mentioned it in Scream 6. Get the TV dropped on him. And you gotta remember, now that they're at a disadvantage because they've both been stabbed. And Billy apparently stabbed Stu way too deep.
Yeah, so he's just fucking bleeding out.
You stabbed me too deep, yeah. man. It's also like a funny thing because they were like rumored to be like a gay couple. And it's made fun of in like Scary Movie. She's fighting them back.
Yeah, that would have made more sense if they were actually gay.
They weren't, but it was just like, you know.
That would have made more sense though.
Yeah.
I feel like that would have been like more motivation for them to like, you know, like a Bonnie and Clyde kind of thing. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, okay.
They had a different motivation. They're psychopaths.
Yeah.
And then boom, it's a one-on-one fight with Billy. And this is where like one of the biggest like tropes after the movie came out. She like stabs Billy, I think. She gets Dewey's gun. Then she shoots him mm-hmm. because he pops back up for one last death. You know, boom, movie ended. All that shit's like all of them are covering news. Cops just randomly show up at the very end.
Yeah, where were you this entire time?
All right. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
You know, this entire movie review fucking sucked. I'm not going to lie to you. On my part, because I didn't have it fucking prepared. But that was Scream.
That was the original.
I'm Scream. So pissed.
I have a decent memory of it.
Yeah. Thank you, Hunter. This is why we bring you on the show, and this is why we pay you big bucks.
I get paid.
Yeah. So Scream... it was a horror classic, and it redefined the genre of slasher movies.
It's another dub by Wes Craven.
Yeah, unfortunately, Wes Craven passed away in 2015. So the you know, the new Scream, and you know, the new Scream series was pretty much dedicated to his memory.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I know, I think that they are doing a really good job. Keeping the Scream franchise alive.
I think they're doing what he did with the first movie,
which was redefining.
How do we redefine all this shit?
Yeah. And they're going insanely meta now. You know, Scream 5 came out in 2020. That was very, very meta. No, it came out in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And it was or 22. We're big fans of the franchise. And Scream 6 came out this week. So we're going to get into a little bit about what we liked. Obviously, it's a murder mystery slasher movie. We have to talk about spoilers somehow. We can just talk a little bit about the movie itself in general. And then we'll get into spoilers a little bit after. So... Hyder, what did you think of Scream 6?
It is my second favorite one in the entire franchise.
Behind Scream, the first
Behind one. The original.
Mm-hmm.
It goes for me, original, 6, 5, 2, 3, 4. After Scream 5, it's like a drop off to like a 3 out of 10. They're pretty bad, but it just for me, it's like a bias thing. I like the slasher a lot. I like the idea of it just being a normal person.
So, you know, we didn't talk about Scream 5. This Scream 6 is like a direct sequel to Scream 5, to the events. So if you haven't watched Scream 5, I mean, I'm pretty sure we're not going to go into it. But you should definitely watch Scream 5. So, yeah, let's just talk about it. I mean, for me, I think that the movie is good. I gave it like a 7 out of 10. There wasn't a lot bad. But it's a Scream movie. I didn't expect, like, perfection, you know?
Yeah, but that's the thing I always talk about, where I'm like, horror doesn't get the respect it deserves. So much shit you have to do to, like, nail a horror movie. The pacing has to be correct, otherwise people get bored.
Mm-hmm.
The kills have to be gory, otherwise people get bored. The acting has to be on, like 100. Because if you have a bad actor in a horror movie, it is so, like, easy to spot that.
Yeah. And that's what I love about the new Scream movies that they're doing. Because Melissa Barrera and Jenna Ortega are great lead characters. They play the sisters here, and perfection. They were attacked in the first movie. When I say the first movie, I mean
5.
Yeah, Scream 5. So they were attacked in the first movie, and you know they're back now. It's set in New York City, so you know it goes to like bigger and better. You know, you know how the sequels of movies always try to go bigger and better? Yeah. This is Scream being meta again because they know that trope that they go to New York and they literally go to New York here.
So the thing that is different about this is if you notice, always in horror movies, it somehow ends up in the same town.
Mm-hmm.
Especially fucking like Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Every movie is in the same town. They're like, why the fuck would we stay in the same town? We got attacked here.
Yeah.
Let's leave. And so their past follows them there. Mm-hmm. Which is a little different than other movies, you know, like especially slashers where they're like in a different area. That's not something a normal killer would do. Mm. And so you got to imagine copycat killer, they probably already know because there's no way the other killers are alive because every single time the killers die.
Yeah. So I think that the performances in this movie were great, particularly by the first two lead actresses. But then you have like the two people from
the last movie.
Yeah, the twins
did pretty good. Right? The twins did pretty good.
Yeah, I think they did really good.
Hayden Panettiere's back in the movie.
Yeah, from Scream 4. She did
really good. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, Courtney Cox.
Yeah.
I think this is her best.
Really?
I think this is her best screen.
I think this is her worst.
Really?
Yeah.
I think this is her best.
I did not like Courtney Cox in this movie.
Oh, wow. That much. Really? I didn't like...
It's not like I had a problem with her. It's just like why be here? You know, like, if Sidney Prescott's not here, why would you, like...
Spoiler.
Have a... No. They knew that.
Okay. I think this is her best movie. We can disagree on that, though.
Yeah.
I just didn't like her in the first one. I fucking hated her in all the other ones. Especially 5.
No, yeah, I understand. And honestly, I didn't care much for Gale Weathers as a character in general.
Yeah, Dewey deserved to live.
Yeah, should have been.
Spoiler again, if you haven't watched 5, Dewey dies.
So, you know, let's just go back to Scream 6 in general. I think that the pacing, like you said, is a very important part in horror movies. And I think this one was paced very well. I think that the writing was a little bit corny. And, you know, the dialogue was a little bit corny. But, again, I'm willing to overlook that because it's a fucking Scream movie. They get very meta with it. They have that whole group up scene where, you know, the film nerd talks about the rules that you cannot break in this movie. Everybody is a suspect. Do not have sex. Never trust the boyfriend or the love interest. And they end up breaking a lot of those rules. And they just play into it, man. I think that that's what's so special about the Scream franchise. Not only... the entire Scream franchise, but these last two movies that, and I'm assuming that they're going to make a new trilogy. This is going to be like a Halloween Kills, Halloween Ends kind of trilogy.
One, I think if I was correct, this is their highest grossing one.
Oh, I don't know.
I think this is one of their highest grossing ones.
How would we know that? It just came out.
And the weekend's over.
Yeah, but I mean, it's their highest grossing.
I think it's not the highest grossing. One of their, like, of the six movies, it's one of their highest grossing ones already.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Shit, man. Overall, I think that it's a good movie. I do like Scream 5 better.
I like this one a lot better.
Mine goes Scream, Scream 5, Scream 6. I don't care about the rest ones.
Yeah, the fourth one is... I care about that one because it's the worst one. It was very glad at the way they decided to make the movie. Instead of just being the typical, like, hey, who done it?
Uh-huh.
They were like, nah, killer's leaving clues.
It felt more like a murder mystery this go around instead of a slasher movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that. It obviously had a lot of slasher elements in it still. It's still a slasher movie.
Oh, yeah.
But the murder mystery part of it was what got me hooked.
I think it's time to get into some spoilers.
Yeah, let's get into spoilers here. If you guys haven't watched the movie, I mean, go watch the movie, come back, listen to this podcast. If you don't care about it.
If you don't care about it, I got some shit to say.
Yeah, if you don't care about it, I mean, yeah, just stay here.
I'll find out where you live.
So. The opening scene, I want to talk about that real quick. The opening scene with this girl on a date. And she is reminiscent of Drew Barrymore's character. For some reason, she is stupid enough to get lured into an alley.
He legit says it.
Hey, can you come over to this alley real quick? This dark alley, like behind the dumpster. I think I see you. And she goes, no, I don't see you.
You're missing what made her look so dumb. She is a slasher movie film professor.
They understand that these are tropes, yet they still don't understand that these are tropes, and they don't fucking like they don't listen to themselves.
Yeah, they're not self-aware.
It's annoying. Anyway, lures her outside of the bar, kills her in a Ghostface costume. One thing that they threw me off with was that we actually saw who killed her.
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, he took the mask off, and it's Peter Parker's best friend.
Flash Thompson?
It's fucking Flash Thompson. It's Tony Revolori in there. That surprised me. I laughed really hard at that.
That's the Drew Barrymore version, though. Yeah. It was a not so big actor. Mm-hmm. But like, hey, everyone knows who this person is. Let's let you finish this little part of it. But you know what happens next.
So he is revealed to be the killer. And we're a little, because of what we've seen before, we're a little astonished. We're like, yo, we just found out that this guy's like the killer. It turns out he's not the killer. He's like a copycat killer. And he goes home. By the way, copycat killers is like a huge theme of this movie.
I'm going to get into like what the biggest part of this guy's right. thing is.
Though. Right. So he goes home. I'll let you get into that. But he goes home and, you know, we find out we get the ghost face call. We get the what's your favorite scary movie conversation. And, you know, he dies.
He thinks it's his friend because their entire motivation is that they're going to finish what Richie from the last movie started mm-hmm. and finish the movie. The reason that that's so important is because one of the biggest things in scary movies nowadays is people who idolize murderers too much. They had a full shrine yeah. of the mask and everything, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which again is also reflective of what happens at the end of the movie.
So at this point, it's not even just being meta anymore. It's just social commentary.
Yeah, they're making fun of people who idolize killers too much.
Because they're fucking stupid.
There's a lot of shit like that in the past year coming out, especially with like the Jeffrey Dahmer stuff coming out.
Yeah. And you know what I appreciate about that too is that the filmmakers had to have known that. Obviously, yeah. It's a huge theme of the movie. I love that they took the chance to like show this to people. Like, hey, this guy is a copycat killer. He's inspired by these movies. Don't be this guy, because then Ghostface comes in and fucking obliterates him.
Yeah, Tony Revolori's character is main goal. I can't remember his character's name.
I don't know.
Just Tony Revolori in the movie. His main goal was to finish off. Sam and
Tara.
Yeah. So he gets destroyed, and this is one of the goriest deaths I've seen.
Yeah.
Not his death.
We forgot to even mention that in the non-spoiler part. This ghost face is fucking gory.
He opens the fridge because they play one of the old games, the hot cold game, which is like famous. You know, he's playing games with people. He makes him say hot cold. He finds his friend chopped up in the fridge, and then turns around, ghost face just shanking the shit out of him.
Yeah. Like he probably got stabbed like 20 times in a row. Really good opening scene. I think that once again they subverted expectations. That's why I love this franchise right now, and they're doing a lot of new different stuff. They go into a bunch of stuff with is it Sam or Tara? Who's playing? Not Jenna Ortega, the other one.
That's Sam.
Sam.
Yeah.
They're going into a lot of stuff with Sam's past, and I like that a lot. And we're gonna see that later. We'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. But moving on. Yeah, they live in New York City, and they're roommates with Chad and Mindy, along with their other roommate, Quinn, and Mindy's girlfriend, Anika, and Chad's roommate, Ethan. So we got new characters across the board, new setting. We're not in Woodsboro. We're in New York City. Anybody could be a suspect also. And yeah, man, there's a brewing romance with Chad and Tara, mm-hmm. which I totally was not jealous at. Have, you know, this new cop character who is Quinn's father. He is leading an investigation on the killings as well. And then that's how we get into Hayden Hayden's character. Mm-hmm. And she's an FBI agent now, which I thought was funny.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. It's a Scream movie.
It's so a cool way to reintroduce a character instead of just randomly popping up there.
Yeah. So, yeah, Kirby Reed is Hayden's character. And mm-hmm. She's a survivor from Scream 4. They also encounter Gale Weathers, who reveals that Sydney Prescott and her family have gone into hiding. And I think that was just a smart way to, you know, say, hey, Sydney or Neve Campbell didn't want to be in this movie this year.
It was also them giving her like we talked about this in Creed 2. This is a different movie. It's no longer this is the main character.
Yeah, I feel as if they brought Neve Campbell back again,
it would have taken away from the movie.
It would have just been like repetitive, redundant.
She fucks up the killer again,
all the time. And you know, I thought that because another theme of this movie was that the legacy character, well, not just this movie, but the last movie also, these legacy characters always survive. Mm-hmm. They tried to play with that trope a little bit in this movie also, because Gale Weather gets attacked later. You see Kirby get attacked also. I'm jumping a little bit, of course, but
we gotta assume this is a horror movie. They're gonna get attacked anyways. All right, so Sam is at a therapy appointment, and she's reluctant to like get into like why she's in therapy. And the therapist keeps going, you keep reflecting back to your sister not being able to deal with her trauma, but you won't tell me what the trauma is. And she goes, okay, I'll tell you. And she tells the therapist, like, I was chased down by a killer. Here's like all the news articles and stuff. And then he's like, okay, so how did it end? She goes, I stabbed him 22 times.
I fucking love it.
Slit his
part.
Throat and shot him in the head. I fucking love it. And the therapist goes, I am not equipped to deal with this. Please get out. I have to call the cops.
We have a friend who went tried therapy one time, and he told all of his fucking trauma to him, and the therapist ghosted him. So yeah, man, that whole part,
that plays a really big part later on in the movie. So after this, you find out that there was a Reddit page, which is really fucking smart.
Yeah,
because that's where like a lot of the gory shit, like a lot of the weirdos, like they go to Reddit. There's a bunch of Reddit like pages that are 100% sure that Samantha Carpenter is the killer. She is the original killer, like from the last movie.
Yeah.
That she framed her boyfriend and some random like senior in high school.
Yeah. What I love about that, they're still fucking with the audience, because like you can tell that Samantha has like this weird like urge to kill people.
Yeah.
Right? And that's based on her father being Billy Loomis from Scream, the original.
All right, so flash forward, she gets home, and this is where you run into the first side character.
Quinn.
You run into Quinn. She is the quote-unquote slutty, stupid roommate.
Yeah.
You literally run into her, and she's just having some like really aggressive sex.
Sam is looking for Tara, her sister. Quinn tells Sam that Tara is at a frat party. So she's at that frat party. Even though Sam told her not to go to that frat party, she still went.
Where is Tara? I won't be mad, because her character is the like really aggressive older sister, like protective of her sibling. And Quinn goes, promise you won't be mad. And she tells her where she went. And then Sam goes, I begged Tara not to go to that party, because in Scream, that's the trope. You die at parties.
Yeah. Side note to cut you off, Sam and Tara remind me of like Nani and Lilo from Lilo and Stitch.
Oh, super old sister, really young.
Yeah, and Nani is like, you know, the kind of character that like, you know, gets her hands dirty. She like fights and stuff because she's very hard-headed in Lilo and Stitch. You can really see the parallels there that the directors drew inspiration from Lilo and Stitch. That's in this cool. movie.
I didn't see that, but I can see it now. Anyway. So we get to the party, and Jenna Ortega or Tara is incredibly drunk, like super under the influence, and she's just looking for more drinks, and she runs to like this super like, what's his name? I can't remember. It's like Jake or something. They call him like Date Rape Jake or something.
Some random frat boy.
Yeah. She runs into him, and her friends spot it immediately. Remember, her friends are really aware, especially I can't remember her name, but one of the twins, because last time she was at a party, she got stabbed.
Yeah.
And so her girlfriend, Anika, goes, are you okay being here? She goes, yeah, it's fine. It's a different party. And like the chance of me getting stabbed at a party twice is like getting hit by lightning or something. That's what she says. Which I thought, red flag, this character's most likely going to die. Because, you know, rule number one, don't say I'll be back, or like don't say you'll live or something.
Yeah.
And
she was about to have sex.
Yeah.
She was going up there for drinks.
She was going to go up there to get drunk and have sex. He goes, I have a drink. Like, I have more drinks in my room. Immediately, she goes and she gets her brother and goes, hey, go get him. Like, go get Tara. She stops Tara from going upstairs. Tara gets mad. And right when they're about to fight, Sam shows up. And she goes, what are you doing? You know, and then tases the guy in the balls.
Which, again, I love. But also, she's a loving character. And yeah. She's, like, you know, just trying to look out for her sister, because this is a big plot point of the movie. She doesn't believe that that Tara is dealing with her trauma correctly.
Yeah. So they're leaving the party now, and you finally see the entire group together for the first time. Or the entire, like, main group together for the first time. It's the guy
from the first movie, too.
Yeah. You see what they refer to themselves as the core four, with the three extra characters. They're walking, and then randomly a group of like passerbys throws a drink at Sam and start calling her a psychopath, because everyone believes that Sam is the actual murderer. They get to the apartment, and all this stuff happens, and you see Sam looking across the hall at their neighbor, which they referred to as cute boy. I think at this point, Anika starts saying, hey, guys, and they see the, what's it called, for the first time, the news that somebody has killed somebody in an alley somewhere. And then I think you take this part off. I think some little phone call happens. They get a phone call, and it turns out that Sam's ID was left at the scene of Tony Revolori's murder. And so they call her in, and she goes with Tara, and they go with each other, and they end up getting another one of the phone calls. It's from Richie, who, if you've watched the last movie, was stabbed 22 times, got his throat slit, and he was shot in the head. And essentially, it's just Ghostface again threatening them. And this is the first time in any of the movies where they get an ultra-aggressive Ghostface, where he's chasing them into a store, murdering everybody in the store.
That scene was amazing.
Yeah.
The tension was high. I think the camera work, number one, was great. It just felt different to me. It was
quiet.
It was quiet, and the sound effects every time something happened were like the jump scares.
Yes.
And, you know, they're like just, he's hunting them down. And this is where like a lot of the cliches kind of disappear. This is different. He has a shotgun.
This is actually one of where my first, like one of the red flags for me that this movie was a little unrealistic. I mean, obviously they're unrealistic as a slasher, but like there was some super unrealistic shit in this movie.
Right.
You're not one-handing a shotgun. They start fighting back and stuff, and the cops pull up after like he's murdered like five people in the store. It's a little different because they ran into a store, and normally Ghostface, when you run into a place with other people, will just run away. Like, he's just like, fuck it, I didn't get them this time, right? Mm-hmm. No, this dude chases them into the store, kills the first two people he sees, dives out of the way from the guy at the counter who pulls out a shotgun, stabs that guy, takes the shotgun, and just starts airing out the entire store.
Yeah.
So you can tell that, like, this is different now. It's a different type of murder. He's not going to hide. He's not going to be all quick and slash people.
And this is an indication of what you were talking about before, that it's more of an investigation now, because Ghostface runs out of the back of the store when the cops arrive, and he leaves the mask behind.
Yes, he also leaves a mask. It's revealed after that he's also left a mask at the first scene where he killed Tony Revolori's character. So he's left a mask, and when they DNA ID them, it's found out that they're from the actual killers, the old killers. So I think they're working their way backwards. Mm-hmm. So the first mask was from the most recent killings, was Richie's mask. Mm-hmm. Second mask is from the killings before that. And so they get introduced to Hayden Panettiere's character. Back she gets reintroduced. Mm-hmm. They're at the detective's office. They're talking to Quinn's dad. Was it Quinn?
Yeah.
Quinn's dad finds out that he's just so happens to be on the case now that his daughter is attached to. Enter Kirby.
Yeah, so Kirby, she knows Sam from when they went to high school together. Mm-hmm. They explain it as, you know, Kirby was a senior when Sam was a freshman, and she sympathizes with their shared Ghostface trauma. As the sisters leave the station, they get swarmed by reporters, as always. You know, that happens in a lot of the Scream movies. One of those reporters is Gail, once again, and I think you talked about this earlier, that they kind of just do her character again. The same way.
Every movie.
She writes a book about the killings from the last movie, even though she said she never would do that. And it's kind of a callback to the first movie because, you know, Sam ends up punching Tara in the face. Or no, Tara ends up punching Gail in the face.
So Sam swings, Gail dodges, and he goes, you think I've done this once? And
That's when
everyone's like, oh, she's not going to swing again. Swing from Tara out of nowhere and
just
rocks her.
Yeah. So, you know, Gail, she opened up with this book talking about the Richie and Sam situation from the first movie. And she referred to Samantha as unstable and a born killer.
Huge, because they mentioned earlier in the movie, there's Reddit pages referring to Sam as the actual killer.
Yeah.
And so you can link that's like the original cause.
So then we skip over a little bit. And we get to the therapist's house. This is one of the cooler deaths.
Yeah.
He goes to answer the door. Ghostface is there. He breaks through the glass, smashes his head against the bars, and stabs him in the face. And Ghostface goes in there, and he steals Sam's patient file.
And then leaves another mask behind.
Another mask. So it's like playing a game.
Yes.
And it's not just like the game of like, oh, what's your favorite scary movie? He's playing an actual like game.
Like, this time. What does this lead back to type of game?
Yeah. So
he's leaving clues behind, like he wants to be found. Mm-hmm. We're saying he, the killer, wants to be found.
Yeah. Mindy goes home and gathers her brother, the Carpenters, the three new characters, Quinn, Anika, and Ethan, to discuss what Ghostface's murder or motives are and the rules. So this, we have the rule scene once again. They get into like it being super meta now because Quinn, or not Quinn, Mindy starts talking about, oh, it's no longer just a sequel. It's a sequel to a requel. And they're just playing around now. And I don't mind that. It's just getting a little confusing for me. But I don't mind it. They're mentioning the fact that they're a franchise now. And that, you know, there are new rules. They're in a new city with higher stakes. More potential suspects. To the point where even the survivors of the last killing spree are suspects.
This is the part I actually liked a lot from the movie. Because this is the first time in any of the Screams where they label what every character is. They label the legacy characters. They look at Ethan. They're like the virgin, the new significant other, the lucky roommate, like all that shit.
And they ask those questions that, you know, the audience is asking, like, oh, how did you become their roommate?
Yeah, randomly? It's essentially now no longer meta and just completely self-aware.
Yeah, not to the point where it's like it's parody. Bailey talks to Kirby. As the mask left behind at Stone's murder scene belonged to Roman Bridger, which was Sydney's half-brother, who was the only Ghostface that didn't work with a partner, basically the one from Scream 4. They try to analyze the connection between the previous 9 Ghostface killers. Kirby had a they literally have like a like the pin, the push pins, and like the faces of the ghost killers. Yeah, the Charlie Day scene. Kirby had to deal with Sydney's cousin Jill Roberts and her partner Charlie Walker, who stabbed Kirby and left her scarred. Which leaves out the connections between Stu Mocker, Nancy Loomis, and her partner, Mickey. So they're just trying to piece this whole thing together. And it's really fun. I think that that's what was most intriguing for me, was that, you know, we were trying to figure it out too. Not just because people were dying, but because these guys like are genuinely curious about figuring out this connection between the past ghost faces.
So we're back at the apartment. This is when they find out there's another killing. Mm-hmm. And they essentially start actually naming themselves the Core Four.
Right.
They're like, hey, we are a family. We've been through a lot of shit together. Nobody blames anybody else. Mm-hmm. And so, for some fucking reason...
Well, they say this because Sam starts getting paranoid and she's like,
what if I just like let my self die, like type of thing?
Yeah, because they just want her, but it's not true, so they bond over that.
This is what I thought was one of the funniest scenes I've seen, and it was like, and I hope it was intended to be very funny. On the other side of their apartment building, is
Cute Boy,
who apparently has been sleeping with Sam, mm-hmm. and they have like a semi relationship for what, months, I mm-hmm. think. Mm-hmm. He looks into what he can see is Quinn's bedroom, and he sees a ghost face standing over Quinn, and he's yelling, like from his window. To the other part of the apartment. He's like,
holy shit. Hey! Hey! He's like, yo! Trying to get their attention.
And he can see them in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And so he starts blowing up Sam's phone, and they notice. Mm-hmm. And then she goes, yeah, I've been sleeping with him. And they all, which is this part I thought was really funny, because if you have a friend group, shit happens like all
that.
The time.
Yeah, it's like that.
Where they're like, we knew it. Yeah. We fucking knew you were sleeping with him.
Mm-hmm. So the chemistry between these four, I thought it was strong in the first movie. And it's just even stronger here because obviously
you can tell these are old developed friendships now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like it makes sense now. And I'm rooting for this whole, you know, friend group.
He's blowing up her phone and he notices she's not answering. So he texts Tara.
Uh-huh.
A picture of I think he airdrops Tara a picture of Quinn's getting stabbed to death.
Yeah.
This is very important, by the way. So they automatically know what's going on now. Mm. They start getting freaked out. They huddle into a corner of the room and they get Anika's attention because mm-hmm. she's the only one left out of the Core Four mm-hmm. right now. At this time, the only people in the house are Anika, the Core Four, and Quinn and her, like,
the partner she's having sex with. Yeah.
Cue to, like, a legit, like, huge Boom, Ghostface crashes through the door with Quinn's body and throws it at Anika. Mm-hmm. And immediately slashes Mindy. Mm-hmm. Mindy gets cut on like a pretty serious part of her arm and starts gushing out blood. And Anika, which I thought was really, really cool, that they showed a side character actually trying to help the main characters, starts protecting her girlfriend.
Yeah.
And poor girl gets lifted off the ground. Which shows that this Ghostface has some fucking crazy strength.
Yeah.
Legit lifted off the ground by her throat and just, like, split open.
Yeah.
Now, this is my other super unrealistic, like, thing. Again, I get it. It's a slasher movie, but, like, sometimes you got to be realistic.
Yeah.
She got cut from, like, her pelvis to her belly button, and nothing came out besides blood.
And, you know, again, we talked about the movie being super gory, which we love. But
that was a weird choice of not making it gory.
Yeah, right? I mean, like, why not?
So they do, well, again, what's another rule? They break it immediately. Mm-hmm. You're never supposed to split up.
Yeah.
I can never remember the guy. Chad and Tara run down the stairs and they close the door behind them. And then Ghostface locks the door, essentially leaving two people he just stabbed and Sam in the room with him.
Yeah, because Chad's whole thing was trying to keep Tara safe because he's in love with her.
Yeah.
But then they realize, like, wait, no, fuck everybody else.
Sam, and this shows Sam's character immediately. Instead of going and just, like, running away, immediately booked it to the kitchen to grab a knife.
All the knives were gone.
All the knives are gone, essentially meaning that it's somebody close to them.
Yeah. Someone has access to the apartment.
Someone had that. She noticed that shit immediately. Like, someone had access to our apartment, removed all our knives. This was what I thought was funny as shit. She created a weapon, which is what they don't do ever. She grabbed the knife block and started beating him with it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to point out, too, that after you said she started beating him with it, these movies, Scream 5 and Scream 6, have both done it. I really hate when
they hit him and run away.
They hit him and run away.
Yes, I was going to point that out, but not this scene. There's a specific scene that I want to point out.
The fucking end, which, yeah.
No, not the end either. There was a scene that pissed me off because my entire group that was watching the movie was like, what the fuck? All right, so she hits him with, by the way, if you've ever held a knife block, that shit's like 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
You're beating the fuck out of somebody with that thing.
That's why I love Sam as a main character. She's smart and she's not stupid.
Immediate reactions every time. Mm-hmm. So she's hitting him, and at the same time she's hitting him, goes run to the other room, to the other two that are like bleeding right now. Essentially because she sees them as like little siblings.
Mm-hmm.
She's also trying to protect them. And if you notice, she put herself in between Ghostface and the two others.
Mm-hmm.
And so these two people, I'm trying to remember, super unrealistic. Anika should not have been moving at this point.
No. Anika should have been fucking dead.
Yes.
And that's a trope in the rest of this movie that kind of pissed me off that I didn't like. People get stabbed and get hurt so many fucking times in this movie.
And just recover.
And do not die.
Yes.
And it's annoying. And we'll get into that later.
So I'm going to quote scene in a movie because I feel like it was directly copied from another movie. So they get to the bathroom, or is it the kitchen or the bathroom that they were locked into?
It's their
Quinn's bedroom.
Quinn's bedroom, yeah.
So they run past Quinn's bathroom though, and they see Quinn's like person she's having sex with just getting chopped the fuck up.
Yeah.
They lock one door, and then immediately Mindy starts trapping the other door shut because the guy is like pounding on the door. Mm-hmm. This is a very important thing I'm gonna point out later. This dude is barreling through the door, like he's pushing a table, a person, and the door out of the way right now. They look across the hall and they can see his name's Danny, I think, Danny, which is cute boy. And she goes, I'll help you guys out. Slide the window up, and he shoves a ladder across.
Okay.
Yeah, so he puts a ladder across the building, and then again showing Sam's character, she's like, you guys should go ahead of me. And Mindy's like, no, you go ahead of us, and we'll be right behind you guys. Because remember, these two people, they care about each other. It's the only part where I thought Sam would not actually do this. She would have let them go first. She gets across, and then super tense. And again, I don't think this would happen. Mindy and Nika start arguing, and she's like, hey, I'll be right behind you.
Mm-hmm.
And Mindy gets across. Anika, again, how the fuck is she doing this? Split the fuck open.
Yeah, man. And
she gets on a ladder, which is, you've ever like held yourself up in that position before?
Yeah, it's hard.
It's hard.
And then now try doing that when your fucking abs and your core is like split open.
How are her guts not falling out. Okay, so again,
this is one of the funniest deaths in the
this
movie.
This is one of the funniest deaths in any horror movie I've ever seen. It's really fucked up because this character was like a super sweet character.
Yeah.
Which is like, again, typical what happens in scary movies. The really nice character always ends up dying. Mm-hmm. It's always another significant other, another person, because, you know, it gives them motivation to live on and shit. These guys are really strong. We've already noticed at this point because he's pushed a door, a person, and a table out of the way. Mm-hmm. He just picks up the ladder and starts like fucking speed roping the ladder.
Yeah. So she eventually loses her balance, obviously.
She gets all the way to Sam. This is very important. All the way to Sam and holds Sam's hand.
Uh-huh.
And then loses her balance.
Yeah. And yeah, she falls to her death because they're in New York now. So they have, you know,
a fucking really far fall.
Far fall. And she smashes her face against the dumpster.
And just hits the ground.
And hits it, yeah.
All right. They get across. So obviously, you know, they have no choice. But to, like, the Ghostface has no choice but to, like, just leave at this point. Mm-hmm. He's already dropped three bodies. Ghostface leaves. You cue to the next morning.
So, okay. So back up a little bit. We have the body count being the girl from the beginning, Jason, the
his friend.
Yeah. And then his friend. So that's three.
The four people in the gas station.
Yeah. Okay. So that's eight. And then you have the therapist.
The therapist.
Nine. And then you have the guy that Quinn was having sex with. 10.
Now you'll have Quinn, which makes it 11.
Quinn.
And now you have Anika. 12. That's a fuck ton of bodies. Remember, this is like an hour into the movie now.
Yeah. So they were hyping up this this ghost face from the beginning. This is the most, you know, violent ghost face. And yeah, an hour through the movie, already 10 bodies have piled
12.
Up. 12 bodies have piled up.
Yes. So the next part is it's essentially now morning time. Detectives have got to the scene. Ambulance is at the scene. They're all taped up now. The detective walks. I can't remember his name. What's his name? Bailey walks out back out of the apartment and is just rocked. You can see that whatever it was he just saw wrecked him emotionally. And then you remember that Quinn is his daughter.
So Bailey's mourning Quinn's death, vowing to silence whoever did this. But he's wrecked so much that the police take him off the investigation. And Sam and Tara offer their condolences before they are met by Kirby and Gail. Gail says she discovered something that everyone needs to see. Chad and Mindy also suspect Ethan because he was nowhere to be found during that time. Even though he claims to have an alibi, he said he was studying. And, you know, the group chemistry now is all over the place because Anika's dead, Quinn is dead, and, you know, Ethan was nowhere to be found.
So now in everyone's eyes, Ethan is suspect number one.
Yes. So nobody can really trust him. But Gail brings the group to a location that Jason and Greg, the two fellas in the beginning that were killed, that they had rented out. And it's a museum in an abandoned movie theater that is purposed as a shrine to Ghostface. So, you know, Kirby, she sees the knife that was used to stab her in Scream 4. Sam stares at Billy's mask and cloak, which is also in a glass casing. Mindy and Kirby, they bond over their share of, you know, their love of horror films. Tara walks out because it's too much for her to be involved in the legacy of ghost killers. And Sam privately tells Gail that she feels her coming back into Tara's life has made things worse for her. So, you know, Tara and Sam, that relationship is suffering from this. Sam thinks that, you know, it goes back to the apartment scene where they were bonding over it and became the core four. Sam thinks that it's just better if she's not in her life anymore. The group then plans to catch Ghostface by tracing the location of his call. He calls Sam from Richie's phone once again, and Kirby tracks it to an apartment building. Sam and Tara realize that this means that the killer is going after Gail.
Let me tell you something right now. This is the dumbest shit I have ever seen. But it was so fucking funny to me. I hope it was on purpose. So, Gail's at home. I think she's on her phone or something. And instead of him calling her phone, he just calls their house phone. And her boyfriend, who's just a random guy at this point, just random, some random dude that's just there. It's her boyfriend, this really big built dude. Answers the phone and goes, "Hey, Gail, it's not for me, it's for you." "Oh, yeah, who's it? Who is it?" He says his name's the killer. All casual. Do you not know Gail's past? I would have been rocked. I would have been like, "Oh, shit. What do I do now?" She grabs the phone from him and mouths, "Call 911. And he walks out of the room. You see him in the very back of the movie as she's talking to this ghost face. And this is what clicked to me, that there was multiple killers, because she's on the phone with one of them. And if you look in the background, he gets snatched. Let me point out something to you later on, but remind me to come back to that part of him getting just absolutely snatched like that. Gail watches her significant other gets tossed through a wall. And he goes, one of the funniest lines in the entire movie is, "All those muscles for what?" Which, in my opinion, shows that the ghost face that was talking to her has some serious, people being bigger than him. And then she starts going one-on-one with one of the ghost face. This is the part that we talked about earlier. Why the fuck did they hit and run away? She, runs immediately to her kitchen and grabs a cast iron pan. Anybody who held a cast iron pan, that shit's, 10 pounds?
It's heavy.
It's heavy as fuck. Rocks the absolute shit out of the ghost face and drops the pan.
It's so stupid.
I would have been beating the fuck out of somebody with that thing.
Look, these movies are starting to get too meta.
Yes. Yes.
And too, self-aware.
Yes.
I hope they don't keep playing into that.
Gail, for the first time I see somebody run for an actual weapon. Yeah. She makes her way into her closet where she apparently has a lockbox. And she pulls out a gun. And obviously the person on the outside of the door, she locks the door. The ghost face doesn't realize she has a gun. And she starts firing through the door. Instead of doing what everybody else does and opens the door.
Gail says something like, "Oh, because I have a gun, you motherfucker." And she says like that. I'm just like, you really? Do we really have to fucking say all that? Just shoot the fucking gun.
So she makes it outside after she realizes that there's no ghost face on the outside of her door. She walks out into her living room and does for the first time something I think is insanely smart. She hangs up the phone. Or she goes, "Can you hold for a second?" Hangs up the phone and calls the phone number back. And realizes that the person that is on the phone with her.
That's the kind of meta that I like.
Yes. It's just in the closet.
Yeah.
And she fires 3 rounds into the closet. Mm-hmm. And that person gets shot. And you hear him or her get shot immediately.
It's fucking funny too. He's like, "Oh, can you hold for a second?" He's like, "What?" And you hang up the fucking phone. And then
call that phone number back.
Yeah, you call it back. Yeah, it goes to her having experience.
Yes.
Because this is her 6th movie now. And
she fires 3 rounds into the thing and then gets bum rushed by the ghost face.
Yeah.
Because now this person's realized that she has a weapon.
Yeah.
And I think did she get stabbed immediately? No. They start playing fucking hide and seek with each other behind a pillar of the wall.
Uh-huh.
And then she judo flips him into a table and then gets her hand on the knife and is going to stab ghost face. And then that ghost face grabs a shard of glass, stabs her in the side, and then as he's standing above her, about to sink the knife into her face, she goes, essentially, I've lived enough, you're not gonna, I never died to you, essentially, because she stops him, and Sam runs into the room, grabs the gun that slid to her somehow, and absolutely scuffs the fuck out of 3 shots.
Yeah, not a great shot.
Not a great shot at all, which you would think, let me aim before I shoot.
Something to mention too, Gail also did the thing that we were complaining about too. Right before she was about to fucking stab Ghostface in the face, she has to say something.
Yeah.
She's holding the knife over her face or over her head and is like, "Yeah, blah, 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 blah." This whole fucking speech.
They get there, they show up, and Gail starts giving her goodbye. Mm-hmm. Her essentially, "I've lived long enough." You know, she had to witness Dewey die. She's witnessed Sydney have a good life. She's like, "I've lived long enough."
Yeah.
And Tara and Sam essentially feel like it's their fault that Gail has to go through this again.
Mm-hmm.
I personally did not like this part, in my opinion, because she actually got the fight back finally. She's usually always getting bodied by the fucking Scream. Or by Ghostface. By Ghostface. Still kept her alive. Paramedic shows up and sees she has a weak pulse. She got rocked. She got stabbed twice. She got cut and stabbed by a fucking huge shard of glass.
These are not superheroes, man. They cannot fucking live after shit like this.
And you gotta keep in mind, she's also worse. Isn't she 50 or 60?
It just gets worse towards the end.
Yes, this is why I rated it 7 out of 10.
All right, so we're gonna hurry up a little bit. Yes. We're gonna kind of just go through it. All right. Stop me if you want to talk about something.
Okay.
Okay, so outside, Sam gathers with Tara, Chad, and Mindy. She says that they feel like she's the only way for this to end is for Ghostface to find her and finish her off so that the rest of the loved ones are spared. With Kirby's help, the group agrees to trap Ghostface at the museum by luring him there. They contact Bailey to let him know their intentions. The group heads off in a subway, which is one of the best scenes, I think, in the movie also. The subway scene, it was fucking, you know, they got separated on accident this time. You know, they didn't just fucking veer off like stupid characters in a horror movie.
This was a great way for them to reflect suspicion, because they mentioned that cute boy pulls them onto the train.
Yeah, so he pulled them onto the train, realizing now that they were
separated.
And Mindy and Ethan were on a different train. So they were 5 minutes behind.
And Mindy thinks Ethan is suspect number one.
Yep. So they're the whole entire time they are separated, and Mindy just does not want to talk to them until they group up with everybody else. Sam, Tara, Chad, and Danny, cute boy, are paranoid because there are multiple New Yorkers dressed as Ghostface. On Mindy's train, she is attacked and stabbed twice by a Ghostface. And after he disappears, Ethan pulls her out of the subway and has subway workers help Mindy. So Ethan is shown to be, you know, innocent. He was just on the other side of the train and didn't even know that Mindy got stabbed until everybody gets let off. This is a funny part, too. Mindy got disappointed because she wrongly predicted who the killer was again. So she's 0 for 2 now.
I quote, I hate franchises.
I hate franchises. They're getting super fucking meta, bro. Okay, so the others who are on the train 5 minutes ahead, they arrive at the museum. Sam tells Danny to stay behind because she cannot fully trust him, which, again, is why Sam is one of the most important and smartest characters in here, because if this was anybody else, they would have fucking let that person come in. That's what she said.
And Danny, being like how much he trusts Sam, was like, I get it.
Yeah. And, you know, that kind of averted my expectations also, because I thought that maybe, you know, Danny would get offended by that and, you know, cause more conflict or whatever. But everybody knows in this movie that it's they have to play by horror movie rules. Mm-hmm. So they wait to trap Ghostface. Sam gets a call from Bailey, who says that he reveals that Kirby is actually unstable and she was fired from the FBI months ago. So Sam now thinks that Kirby is Ghostface. So she runs with Tara and Chad. The latter two are alone, who get comfy before sharing a kiss, which was a hard watch. It was a hard watch for me. It was a really hard watch. until Ghostface comes back and stabs Tara in the back. Chad fights them off for a second. And this was the fucking part that pissed me off, because Chad is huge, man.
This dude's Chad like is huge. 6'2"?
Gets a bunch of fucking hits in. And he's running away and like just throwing shit in front of them so that he can't. Bro, just tackle him. You played football.
No.
Tackle them.
That's what bothered you. What bothered me is clean as fuck through the spine.
Yeah.
Jenna Ortega gets stabbed.
No. And she fucking lives.
Well, I don't care about lives. Bro, she was getting up and sprinting.
Everybody who got stabbed in here, they treated it as if they sprained a fucking ankle. Or something. No adrenaline in the world will save you from being stabbed in the fucking spine to the point where you can just keep running.
So, when I tell you that Chad was getting his fucking licks in, though.
Yeah, he was.
He was fighting 2-on-1 and rocking the fuck out of them.
If Chad was smart like Sam, Chad would have fucking like snapped that person's neck then and there. He had him on the floor, but instead he punches him and then turns around. Go, Tara, go. Let's go. Finish the motherfucker off, yes. Please. Obviously, they don't do that.
They get back around. They end up back in the lobby because they were just running around in circles at this point.
Yeah.
And then Chad accidentally travels into the UK. Just gets stabbed to fucking death. What? they were shaking the fuck out of him.
In the UK, bro?
Yeah, that's what they fucking do there.
Fuck, he got shivved.
Yeah, they were legit holding his arms back and just stabbing got his torso.
Got fucking double teamed.
Yes, and that's when you find out right then and there, multiple.
Yeah, because they both show up at the same time and they're just holding it. Which again, bro, like you're gonna see who the killers are. There's no fucking way that they could have done that a fucking 6'3" D1 athlete.
All right, so they run all the way inside the theater now. Mm-hmm. And Kirby pops up.
And remember, they think it's Kirby.
Yeah, they think it's Kirby. What I love about this, too, is that they're playing more into the murder mystery thing because now they threw a curveball. Oh, shit, it's Kirby. She's unstable. She got fired. Now we're thinking that it's Kirby for the next, like, 5 minutes. And then now we see two Ghostface. We're like, okay, well, there's two. Who's the other one? And then now we see Kirby pop up. We're like, okay, well, it's not Kirby then. And then we see Sam. We know that Sam is reluctant to kill people. Mm. She almost fucking shot Kirby. And I'm pretty sure someone shoots Kirby. I forget who.
Detective Bailey shows up and goes, she's evil.
Yep. So it's like a Mexican standoff between them. And that's what I loved about the movie.
And okay, so she shoots Kirby and then he starts like laughing. And then you realize that the third person is him. And this is when it clicked in my head what immediately was happening. I was like, holy fuck. They never showed Quinn's body. Unveil the mask and it's Quinn. Yeah. And I'm like, so that means who's the next person? Unveil another mask, it's Ethan. And it turns out that his son and daughter were helping him out the entire time. But it's revealed that Ethan just lied on his like application.
Bailey arrives, shoots Kirby, revealing that he is one of the Ghostface killers of the three. And the other two come out, they take off their masks. Boom, there's three Ghostface killers. One of them is Ethan. The other one is Quinn. And it's a father, son, daughter trio. Yes. It's revealed that Richie from Scream 5 was their brother. And they're out there trying to finish Richie's film.
They knew that Sam had to die.
Yeah. So they're out there trying to finish Richie's film. It's a sadistic fucking like reveal.
I didn't like that it was three killers. I liked that they gave each killer a different personality, though. You paid attention to the way that they were killing people. Mm-hmm. So the two women were stabbed by Quinn. Uh-huh. Chad and I think it was the professor, or not the professor, the therapist, were what's it called? Ethan.
Yeah.
Ethan's really gruesome. Like, he is trying his hardest to fucking destroy people. And he's, like, super violent, and he's pounding through doors and shit, and he's, like, rushing through stuff. Quinn is a little more, like, sleek. Like, she's trying to dodge hits. Like, she's not trying to take any hits because she's tiny.
Right now, we're in the last 20 minutes. And when that Quinn reveal happened, like you said, you started thinking back to when we thought Quinn died.
Yes.
And something that I noticed was that when Quinn died, it was completely different than any of the other deaths that we saw. Yes. Because we saw her get lifted up and we assume that she got stabbed because you hear the sound effects, you see the knife, but you don't see her actually die. And as we were talking about earlier for Scream, the review, Stu and Billy go so far to stab each other too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, well, people are willing to get stabbed just so that they can, like, you know, make themselves look innocent.
Yes.
And that's what Quinn was doing this entire time.
Yes, and the entire time they were trying to get Sam to put the mask back on so they could frame her.
So their motive, right? Revenge against Sam because they were Richie's family and she killed him. But the museum was all his.
It was a shrine from Bailey to his son.
Mm-hmm. He didn't fully understand his fascination with, you know, the stab movies and stuff like that or the murders, but he still fully supported his son's filmmaking endeavors, and that's why they wanted to finish the movie by killing Sam and Tara.
Which is another meta-up thing because that's what a lot of, like...
That's what a lot of people are doing now.
A lot of people do. They like, regardless of what their kids do or what their, like, loved ones do, they will support them.
Yeah.
Even if it's something fucking, like, gross or evil.
Yeah. So before Sam begins taunting them by saying Richie was a pathetic man-child, and this provokes Quinn and, you know, yeah, and Ethan to try to attack. It's just Sam and Tara there, and this is like a badass scene, bro. Like, Sam is becoming one of my favorite horror movie like protagonists. She's talking her shit, and she provokes Quinn into coming over at her, and they start fighting. Sam gets some licks in too. She stabs Ethan before running off with Tara.
Tara got one of the fucking most satisfying hits in I've ever seen in a movie. Mm. Quinn runs up on her and you're like, oh, she's about to stab her. Bink with a brick.
Yeah.
How the fuck did that not do more damage?
But this is, again, one of my problems with it. They get their hits in, but then they run away.
When that one, this one makes a little more sense to me because I mean, their dad's right behind them with a gun.
I mean, it does, but at the same time, they're still running away. Yeah. So, like, the sisters run to the balcony. Tara is falling over and is being lashed at by Ethan, who's on the floor, while Quinn, up on the balcony, is getting cornered or is cornering Sam. Tara sells Sam to let go, which is, like, a thematic thing. You know, Tara is the younger sister, and Sam is the older sister that is very protective. So Tara's telling her to let her go. And Sam giving her the knife before dropping her. Tara stabs Ethan in the mouth and twists the knife, which is like super fucking gory.
Yes.
When Sam taunts Quinn over her losing another psycho brother, Quinn runs at her and she gets shot in the head.
What Ethan said to Jenna Ortega before falling was one of the shittiest lines
I've ever
seen in the movie. Yeah. But it was just so funny because of how shitty it was.
Yeah,
go ahead. So Ethan's trope was he's the virgin friend.
Yeah, and they said that in the very beginning.
Yeah, they said it from the very beginning, and he's like, I don't want to die a virgin. Mm-hmm. So as she's about to fall, and he has his knife, he's like, I've always wanted to stick something in you.
Yeah, but the delivery, too, was what made like, it was so worse.
Yeah. And the funniest thing, though, is she falls, she gets stabbed, she fucking puts the knife in his mouth, and then she's like, and you can die a virgin.
Yeah. So I think that all the deaths in this movie were satisfying as fuck.
Yes.
That was not the problem for me. I just think that the last 20 minutes kind of took me out of it.
A bit, yeah.
Yeah, just a little bit. All right, so Bailey, the dad, is enraged because all of his kids are dead now. And Sam is out of bullets trying to finish him off. They charge towards each other and they fall over the balcony.
Yes.
Bailey, the dad, wakes up and hears Sam calling him. This is where it gets fucking crazy because Sam, as we know, she has lineage.
She sees visions
of her dad, Billy Loomis, the serial killer from the first one. And I love where they're going with this because she has that unhinged mentality too.
For the first time, it's not like a villain.
It's not. And, you know, we saw Sidney Prescott in the series before. Like, yeah, she's killing people, but like she kind of has to survive.
Yeah.
This is one of those instances where she has like, you know, this battle rage, like this willingness to kill someone. And she like plays with it. So she's doing the ghost face modulator, voice modulator. She is calling Bailey on the phone. She says she has him trapped. And then she finally comes out and stabs him repeatedly. And this was so gruesome, dude. Like, she stabs him like 9,000 times.
UK.
Yeah, yeah. This whole scene takes place in the United Kingdom, by the way, if you guys didn't know.
So this is what there was two things that you missed that I thought were extremely like important. And one was important and one was funny.
Okay.
She's wearing her dad's cloak, has her dad's knife,
yeah,
and has her dad's mask. Mm-hmm. She also uses her dad's signature line. What's your favorite scary movie? Mm-hmm. And then after she stabbed him 20 times, he's essentially begging for mercy. Yeah. Initially, Sam grants him mercy, which is different because, you know, she's super violent. Mm-hmm. And then she looks over at Tara, who's the only reason that she's granted her mercy is because Tara's right next to her.
Yep.
Tara gives her a little nod and she goes, yep, but you fucked with my family. So, yeah.
And Sam deals the killing blow, jamming her knife into Bailey's eye. And Sam and Tara reconcile over their strained relationship, which gets ruined when a not dead Ethan goes for one last attempt to kill them. And that's when Kirby comes back and, you know, finishes him off with the TV that Sidney used to kill Stu Mocker.
Which is funny because Kirby has Stu Mocker's mask. Yep. Or Ethan has Stu Mocker's mask.
Right. So there you go.
Another part we missed was Ethan stabbed Kirby with the knife that Kirby was stabbed with before, and I thought this was the dumbest shit ever, but it was so fucking disrespectful that it was funny. Sam rips the knife out of Kirby and goes, I need this, sorry.
Oh yeah, I love that part, dude. I'm complaining a lot about like how meta they're getting because I can see that there might be pushing it too far, but it's a Scream movie, so like these things are fine.
Yeah, you know? it's just like in I think some things need to be a little more realistic. Yeah. Like, it's a slasher, so I'll we'll let it slide. But
no, a lot of things need to be more realistic here.
Now here's the two most unrealistic, three most unrealistic things. One, Courtney Cox survived. How the fuck did she survive?
Yeah. So the entire core four survive.
Yes.
Courtney survives. Gail
Ethan,
survives.
At the very end, Chad, you think he's dead? And then I don't know, they're like, we got a pulse.
Yeah. No. It's so cliche, and, but I like it though.
Yeah, it's fine. That's not the thing that bothered me the most. He can live for all I care about. How is she running? Mindy pulls up on them, and she's just walking the knife wound off.
Yeah.
She got stabbed twice, and the knife turned in her.
They, you know, again, man, I think that they have to draw the line somewhere.
Yeah.
But they made it, like, funny.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, my God, I'm so fucking hooked up on drugs right now. I can't feel anything. Are you guys dead? I got the killer wrong again. Oh, shit. Or I didn't get the killer wrong because it ended up being Ethan. So. Yeah,
but the thing is, how did she know it was Ethan?
She just had a suspicion. That was all.
No, but she came back saying, hey, guys, it's Bailey and Ethan.
Yeah.
How did she know that?
I know there's a part in there that they, like, acknowledged it. Okay. Somehow, but they do that.
Now, there's a little clip at the very end before we get done with this where you think it's all over, the credits start rolling, and then shotgun. Just one last little jump scare.
The entire group receives medical attention.
Oh, yeah.
Tara mourns Chad's supposed death, which we just talked about, until someone, hey, we got a pulse. And he's wheeled out with the oxygen mask on him, like literally needs that to fucking breathe. Fucking Tara takes it off and starts making out with him.
And then goes, oh, sorry, you need this.
Yeah. She's just trying to get me jealous at this point. So the entire core four survives. They're going to be in the next movie. And I'm not mad at that.
It's fun. That's the thing, though. They kept mentioning that the core four would not survive.
Yeah.
And so that their switch was they will this time.
Yeah.
Including all the legacies.
So they subverted expectations. Once again, you think that, you know, from Scream 5, Dewey dies, right? And you think that, oh, they're not scared of killing legacy characters. Well, in this movie, everybody fucking survived. She opens her bag, revealing that she took her father's ghost face mask. And there's a little lingering shot on the mask and Sam's face. Again, that little unhinged part of her wants to take the mask. But she ultimately just drops it in the street. And her and Tara walk off back into the city. And that's Scream 6. Yeah, man, I'm really excited for the future of the franchise. I think that they got me hooked already. Scream 5 got me hooked. Scream 6 got me even more hooked. I want to see more Sam being a violent, brutal murderer. And I want to see where they go with that story because that's a really intriguing and compelling storyline that they can take this. If they don't, I mean, you know, we're still going to get like a slasher movie, a fun slasher movie. But yeah, what'd you think?
Again, give it like a 6 or 7 out of 10. There's a lot of things that could be worked on, but again, slasher, so we'll let that stuff
please
slide.
Put the fucking mic to your mouth, please.
6 out of 10, in my opinion. In my opinion, again, slasher movie. We'll let the unrealistic shit slide. Acting in this one was the best and out of all of them besides the first. But the first, remember, is a 90s movie, so it's a little off.
I was very down with the direction that they took with this one because we talked about loving how it's a slasher movie, but also it's a murder mystery and like an investigation. Really love that. The last 20 minutes just didn't really work for me as much. And you get, I mean, right out of the theater, I did a little out of theater episode of the podcast for like 7 minutes or whatever. And I was talking about it like, yeah, the last 20 minutes didn't really work for me. I don't know if the twist I really fully believed. I didn't know if I liked it or not. The last 20 minutes was just very chaotic and hectic. So, yeah, man, that's Scream 6. If you guys watched it, let us know what you guys thought about it. Okay, so that's the episode. Thank you guys for listening. Really appreciate you guys tuning in. Sorry this episode was kind of shit because I didn't have anything prepared. That was my fault.
It's all good.
But, yeah, we're going to be back next week. We have probably like 3 or 4 episodes straight of straight really good movies.
Yeah.
We got Shazam coming out, which is I'm pretty excited about. And then we got John Wick.
I'm so hyped for that shit.
And then we got Mario.
Which, again, 90-minute movie. Fucking hype for it.
Yeah, so we got a bunch of good movies to review. March and April are extremely packed. And you guys do not want to miss any of the reviews and episodes that we post coming up. Anyway, I appreciate you guys listening.
Goodbye, guys. Keep watching movies. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. Love you guys. And we'll see you later.